So what I noticed is that the whole idea of Gnosticism is actually quite complex. There's the Gnostic philosophies that are very, very Jewish, very based in the Jewish tradition and the Jewish philosophy. There are the Gnostic philosophies that some people say are exactly like Mahayana Buddhism. And then there's question about how did that happen? And, you know, there's a lot of different ideas about it. And we're really not here to talk about Gnosticism. We're really here to explore some of the thoughts and ideas that come out of that tradition in relation to what's useful for us. And one of the things that I found useful, I was reading an article about Gnosticism, and this beautiful verbiage jumped out at me. And they were kind of making the distinction between the early Christians and the Gnostics. And the early Christians actually declared the Gnostics to be heretics. The first time that the early Christians said, that's heretical. It was regarding Gnosticism. So the author of this particular article was speaking to a difference being that the early Christians were very much belief-oriented and faith-oriented, as others have mentioned, whereas the Gnostics were, I'm going to say, experience, personal knowing-based. So one's own direct experience of God was what mattered, not what anybody said about God, what anybody believed about God, what I decided I believed about God. Because in the end, at any given point in time, whatever beliefs each of us explores and tries on for size and says, okay, that kind of resonates, I get that. Like, when you think about your spiritual path, has any of that ever stayed the same for any length of time? As we continue to experience more of life and experience more of the divine, in whatever experiences life gives us, our beliefs, if you will, our philosophies tend to shift with that. But what I found for myself is when I have had a direct experience of the divine, that's changeless. There may be things I believe about that or relate that to or explain that with or, you know, have an understanding more and more. But the actual experience, direct experience of God, I believe once a person has that, if anything anybody tells you after that goes against your direct experience, we're not buying it, you know. I had an experience as a child of, I didn't know it at the time, like I wasn't fully conscious of it at the time, but I realized this was what was happening for me later. I was raised in an extremely fundamentalist Christian church, and it was all about the divine that's separate from us and that is a punishing, judging God, and it was all about trying to win favor and keep favor and be prepared for the judgment day and the heaven that's, you know, just the classic traditional fundamentalist Christian teachings, right? As a child, I wasn't buying it. I mean, for the most part, as children, we're so open and so vulnerable and so transparent. And if the people that we love believe something, we tend to take it in. But somehow, like I said, I wasn't conscious of it at the time. But later I realized that as a child, there was a part of me saying, that's not the God I know. Where'd you come up with that stuff? You know, that's nonsense. And so hopefully we are raised in a way that we believe in ourselves enough that it is so much more about what we believe in ourselves than about what we believe outside of ourselves or what anybody else tells us or what we believe about somebody else or their authority. And I would venture to say that is still a key piece for all of us. Because what if the truest, most complete understanding of the divine is so complex that each one of us only actually have the ability to understand a piece of it? And what if each one of us who understand a unique piece of it hold that so precious, it can't be swayed, it can't be tainted by anything else? And then if each of us lived into and brought that that which is most precious to us as far as an experience of the divine, and we came together in communion and we stayed together, as Rud was speaking to, that we realized the inherent necessity of our togetherness, we would each bring that unique piece together. And then when we come together spiritually, times like this, and we share thoughts and ideas, each one of us having a unique understanding, there is no need for us to agree. There is no need for us to decide what we believe in and create a creed around it that we all state together. That approach, in my mind, implies that somebody, any one of us, knows the complete picture. And I would propose that we don't. I'm 62 and I don't know anything close to the complete picture. I'm insistent on opening my heart and mind and learning more all the time. Anything that the divine brings to me as an experience of the mysteries of life, I'm open to receive it. And yes, try it on for size. Does it feel, do I resonate with that? But to always be open to more and more and more, like that process is never complete. So the idea of presence, which I love in our consideration time, we spoke quite a bit of. What Adam brought us at the beginning of this time was so rich as far as the willingness to sit in a place of stillness and experience consciousness. Not just our own, but as Adam was speaking, the bigger consciousness. But in experiencing it, does it overwhelm us? Does it confuse us? I would say that exactly the way that Adam led us in the exercise, there's a softness around the experience of consciousness. And when we're able to attain that, we, what's the words I'm looking for? We can allow and let things to flow in and flow out of consciousness. We can allow and let some things to stick in consciousness and other things to flow on by. We don't have to fight against them. We don't have to disagree with them. We can let it be that our own thinking, that is truly our own thinking in the end, comes out of this process of being fully present and allowing thoughts and ideas to flow in and flow out in a way that we have our own unique thinking around it. Yolanda and Martin and now David have always deeply longed for each one in this ministry to bring their own thinking, their own unique thinking. None of those teachers have ever said, this is what I believe, therefore this is what you have to believe. And for those of you that have been in the primal spirituality courses and other courses that we teach, it is said again and again and again, the faculty who present thoughts and ideas during this course will passionately put forth what they believe to be so. And we simply ask you to receive it, try it on, and decide for yourself, and bring your own thinking to it. That, in my mind, speaks to a realization and acknowledgement that each of us has our own knowing. We all have our own knowing, and none of that can be discounted. That's what primal spirituality is about. Primal spirituality, at its core, is about your own innate knowing of the divine and all of the mysteries of life is what matters most. But is there a way that we can be together in workshops or courses or programs in which we invite a person into a deeper knowing of their own knowing, a remembering, if you will? And I would say also, can we invite people to trust themselves more completely so that what they know, they're willing to acknowledge that they know and believe in their own ability to know? Because if we look back through history in, you know, religiously or even spiritually in what goes wrong, I believe that it's mostly, if not always, associated with people losing their ability to trust their own knowing. Because our own knowing, well, and also, can you discern what's your knowing versus what's some neurotic thinking on your behalf? You know, of course, that's not always clear either. I may ask God for divine guidance and think that I got it, but as I begin in that direction, it's clear there's something a little off or whatever. But to always be open to perceive more and to be aware that it's not so black and white as we would like for it to be, but to continue to be open to receive our own inner wisdom, that which we already know. So presence, I had the thought as we were speaking, is the ability to be full of the Spirit. And we've been speaking of the feminine divine a little tonight. And I remember hearing that in various different traditions, the Holy Spirit, if you will, is often associated with the divine feminine. And Rudolf Steiner, who, you know, many of you are aware of many things about Rudolf Steiner and his teachings and Waldorf School and all kinds of things, theosophy and different things, he actually was one of the people who promoted that idea that the Holy Spirit is the feminine aspect of God. I'm not saying that's so. I'm just saying try that on for a minute. Because if you allow yourself to be filled with the Holy Spirit, does that allow you to be in a state of receptivity, which is considered to be a more feminine state? Does that allow you to become a womb space for your world, and that all that is possible, and to wrap your arms around in a motherly, grandmotherly way, I guess you'd say, the people, circumstances, relationships, and everything else that's in your world? If filling yourself with the Holy Spirit is a state that allows receptivity and allows you to be more in touch with your own inner knowing, that does feel quite like a feminine, divine experience. And it also feels to me that the most present that we can be is not with an empty heart and an empty mind, but a full heart, the fullness of Spirit. We teach in EDL teachings the idea of purity of heart, which is that our thoughts and our feelings are not cluttered with impurity and tainted by many things. Judgment, criticism, blame, resistance to what's so, egotism, you know, the list goes on and on and on. Victimhood, shame, guilt, you know, long, long list of things that can taint the heart so that we don't see clearly, that can become a filter. And Yoronda and Martin and David teach and taught that consciousness, which consists of thoughts and feelings, needs to be clear. And it's clear through purity of the heart. And if what's in our heart is blocking an experience of unconditional love and a giving of unconditional love, we are limiting our ability to receive divine possibility, if you will, and bring that into the world. And I had the thought as we were considering this thing of being full of the Spirit that Adam brought into our time, purity of heart isn't like I said before, emptiness. It's not like no thought and no feeling. But it's thought and feeling that's filled with spirit. And in that way, we are able to come together, as Rude was so beautifully speaking to the importance of us to be in communion with one another. Because when we're solid in ourselves and believe in ourselves, it's so much easier to trust others. It's so much easier to be transparent with others and to be open, and we give up our masks, we take off our costumes, and we get real with each other. And then when we're together, it's a real together. It's not a pretend together. So there was one other thing I forgot to share with you, is that the thing about the spark. We were all talking about the divine spark tonight. So in Gnosticism, one of the core beliefs is that the divine created everything to include a spark of the divine in it. And that the key path of a human life is to free that spark of the divine so that it can join again with the divine, become one with the divine. So I leave you with this thought. In what ways is the spark of the divine in you not free? What are the chains that it needs to be freed from? And imagining how it would feel for that spark that longs to be joined again with Source, with the All that is, to what extent are we willing to let go of what's in the way of that and allow that to be free? And to what extent are we willing to be real with each other, transparent and exposed, if you will, without our masks, so that we may assist each other to see what are the chains to break free of and to encourage each other in that way. Well, thank you all very much. I'm sorry we went over our time, but it was fun to be with you. Have a good night.